We sit down at a long table that people had set up. We just have a little old square table that we heisted from 10th Avenue about 10 years ago. Clay was sitting at the end. And I look over and he's sitting there, Aboriginal man in his 60s. And there's a seat beside him. And he motions to me that, you know, the seat's available. So I go over and he pulls the seat out for me. And he invites me to sit. And then Sam comes along. And Dar jumps up. And there's no chair for him, so he kind of jumps up. And everybody scooches over and he puts out a chair. And Sam comes over and he sits down and he invites him to sit down on the table. Everyone scooches over the invitation to sit and to join is extended. And Sam sits down. Invitation accepted at the table. Everyone eats, amazed at the awesome taste and texture of the spaghetti. It was just spaghetti, but it was so good. Don gets thanks given to him, heaped upon him. Don, this is the best spaghetti I've had, I think, ever in my life. This garlic bread is absolutely amazing. Thanksgiving is heaped upon him. And coming from depression, he's on disability, he works a couple hours a day. And as people thank him for this meal that he spent all afternoon making, he's just affirmed and he's given life. He's proud of the meal that he cooked. Some who were really hungry that literally hadn't eaten all day are so happy to have just stuffed their bellies. And they're sitting there completely satisfied with this meal. Some who weren't that hungry, like myself, I'm gluten-free, so he made some extra gluten-free noodles for me so I could actually join in. Others that weren't quite so hungry, we sat there satisfied with the meal, at ease with the company, comfortable with what was going on, and just feeling blessed to be there. Many there that night hadn't been invited anywhere that week. Not invited into a conversation. Not invited to sit down anywhere. Here, come sit beside me. Not invited to relax. Not invited into a safe friendship. Invited to let their guard down. Many people on the downtown side and outside the downtown side, in our neighborhoods, in our families, never get invited into life. They don't get invited into conversation, into friendship. Last time, we reflected on what it would be like. Can you imagine if we lived as if everybody really mattered? We looked at some scriptures, and we spent some time thinking and discussing how Jesus thought and acted in given situations, and began to reflect on how we think to need and how we need to think and therefore act as communities. The theme of setting a table is more than about, okay, we got to learn how to set up the cutlery and do a meal and have our friends over and have our family over. It seems the theme of setting a table is bigger than that. And the theme of hospitality is bigger than that. There's nothing wrong with having our family over and our friends over, and that's really, really important. But what we're touching on is something bigger. Today we're going to examine our thinking about God and about others and about hospitality a little bit more from last time. And what I want to do today is nurture our imaginations. Help us to imagine what we can do, what we can be as people who have been blessed with the opportunities to invite other people in, whether it's into our church, into a restaurant for supper, into our house for supper, into our house to live. Whatever capacity, however big or however small, we've all been blessed with the opportunity and the means to invite people. And so today, I want us to nurture our imaginations, because it's our imaginations that actually lead us in life. When we have our past, we've done certain things in the past, we have what we do now, but the future hasn't been determined yet. The only way we can tap into the future is using our imagination. And if we can imagine, and I think that's what the gospel does, that's what the parables do, that's what Jesus did, that's what the prophets did. They nurtured people's imagination. They said, you know what? This is a reality. This is the suffering. This is the reality that we live in. But imagine it can be different. The kingdom of God is about imagining that life could be different for us and for the people around us. And so as we think about hospitality and sitting at the table, I want us to begin to imagine what that could be for us and for the people around us. What does our life in God really mean to us? What does our life in God really mean to others? Or what could it mean to others? Let our imaginations take us forward. So let's start with, what is hospitality? Just give me a couple of words.
Laughing.
Hospitality is all those things, and just even those words. Aren't those great words? It's life. It's community. It's friendship. But I want to propose on, those are hospitality on the micro level. What is hospitality on the macro level? Well, I want to propose, along with Diana, hospitality actually is salvation. Let's listen to her. Oh no, I don't want to do that. I want to propose that hospitality is worship. Verse. Wrong order. Hospitality is worship. From the book Untamed Hospitality, Newman says, I want to see worship itself as hospitality. Common assumptions regard worship as motivation for hospitality. You know, we go to church and we learn about that we're supposed to love our neighbors, and so we're motivated to be hospitable. We're taught how to be hospitable. Worship as motivation for hospitality, or a place where we might garner some useful information about hospitality. Can you see this?
Yeah.
But such assumptions miss the mark. They make worship a means to an end. They locate hospitality outside of worship. Even more, worship is interiorized, regarded as a motivational force or a cognitive act. The alternative vision, the imagination I want to stir in you, is to set forth, sees worship itself as our participation in God's own triune life. A life that can be characterized as hospitality. The Trinity, our relationship with God, is an invitation into relationship with the Trinity. Our triune God is a relational God, even in himself, herself. He relates to himself, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And the ultimate act of hospitality is God, the Trinity, inviting us into relationship. That's the roots of our relationship with God. That's our roots with our relationship with other people.
So what does that mean? What's an implication of that or two?
Hospitality is an invitation into the Trinity as an act of worship, or as worship.
You mean that, like, that what's it mean as in we're gaining friendship with God, we're being welcomed into friendship with God? Is that the idea?
Yeah, or what are the, have you thought of that before? Does that, if you have thought about it before, how does that stir you? Or if you haven't thought about it before, does that change something for you? Stuff. You know, I need to get more activities. I need to find a hobby. Oh, it's like deep. It's who we are.
Yeah. Another thing is, like, sharing a meal is something very intimate. Like, and like when you invite people over to your home, it's like you're opening up the door of your heart. You're inviting them into your heart, right? And
something you said earlier. You said you had your meal or your church stuff. And then you have people over, something that you said. But I see it always in church.
Yeah, like, I see my whole week as church.
That's,
like,
that's powerful.
Like when I'm doing, like, whether I'm at dance class or washing the dishes, it's all like worship to God, right? I'm doing it for God. Yeah. So I see what you're saying. Like when you invite people over, you're glorifying God. When you do it in God's name, like having the church dinner, inviting neighbors over to make them feel loved. You're glorifying God and living out the commandment to love your neighbor. Yours.
Which kind of gets it in some ways like a bit of a sadness of what's happened with the church, and that the church has become something like we've talked in the past, like an event that we intend, mm-hmm. right? Whereas if we're coming together to reflect this triune God, the sad part of it is that when it becomes the event we intend, so often people attend something, but they never enter into relationship. Right? They go there, they're lonely, and I think that's probably a real travesty, that you would meet in God's name and be lonely at the same time. Right? Mm-hmm. We miss something there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, like, worship is seen as something other than hospitality. So we can worship, but be isolated and lonely. Is that really worship? No. So worship is hospitality. Hospitality is worship. And even when when churches gather together on Sundays, which none of us do, or in your homes, or if I'm on Saturday night, you know, the purpose of it isn't to have this little event where we teach people to be more friendly and nice and loving. It's an act of worship, inviting people in. It's worship as we hang out together. It's worship as we go and we invite other people into conversation, our lives of worship. So that widens the picture of what setting the table is. It helps. The next one is salvation, which is even pushing it further. Mm-hmm.
Hospitality is salvation. That's probably a pretty radical thing to say, but I think that it is absolutely true, is that God welcomes the stranger. We were all made strangers to God in that story that we have in Genesis. Adam and Eve were kicked out. They became strangers to their created identity. God made them to be. They became strangers to one another. They became strangers to the natural world. They became strangers to what was once a harmony. And everything became dissonance. And salvation is God setting a new table and welcoming all back to the table. When we deserve to be far off, God brought us in. Those who were strangers have been made friends. That is it. That is the primary definition of salvation in Christian New Testament. Hospitality is salvation. God's hospitality to us. We turn around and offer salvation to the world by offering open table and inviting the stranger to come and eat with us.
We get
that, the table of God's love, that gives me hope. The idea that everything is changing and that we are moving past some of the things that have divided us. It actually gives me hope that there are millions and millions and millions of people in the world who are rejecting Christianity right now because it has been violent and imperialistic. I would be really worried if there were millions and millions and millions of people in the world who are accepting an imperialistic and violent Christianity. So their rejection shows me that there is at the center of the world a longing for a God of love and a church that practices hospitality and peace and shalom and the real salvation that folks are reaching for. So atheism gives me hope. I think that some people don't actually learn to sort of, what I call, turn the prism on some of the cultural stories we have. They allow atheism to depress them, or they allow people who are reaching towards new religious options to depress them. I just see those as the heartbeat of God at the center of the universe, where people are asking for something better, more truthful, more authentic, and more Jesus-y than what the church has been offering them for many, 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 too many years. We should embrace their longing rather than say, they don't have the school. I think that that's where the Holy Spirit is often operative in our culture. We just look for asking for more rather than less of the church.
Do you really think your everyone's going to walk again, or things going to be made new?
Yes. People ask me all the time, do you believe in the resurrection? And I always love to quote a friend of mine who was a bishop in the Episcopal Church in the 20th century. He died a few years ago in his 90s. And he said, I believe in the resurrection. I've seen it too often to not believe it. And that's dry bones rising. That's that brilliant vision from the old Testament valley of dry bones. And I think that biblical people, the children of Abraham and Sarah always believe in that. And I'm going to hold on to that one. And there's not much way of shaking English from my assertion of the resurrection at this point. I've seen it too much to think that it can't happen again. It happens. Now it's all around us all the time. Just have to look for it and have the eyes to see it.
So, thinking about hospitality, we're thinking about salvation, we're thinking about worship. And salvation ultimately is being invited in by God. And so when we invite others in, and we are in relationship with God, then we are inviting people into salvation. Any thoughts about that?
You can see see why in the book of Galatians Paul got so angry with Peter and some of the other Jesus followers. Because, yeah, they were doing something theologically not correct, but really, it's because Peter was not willing to sit down with the non-Jews at the table anymore. He was breaking hospitality. And for Paul, that was, he was breaking the gospel. He was denying the power of the gospel that allowed us to come and sit together and enjoy the hospitality of each other and of the Father. And that put the gospel at risk.
Like the church so often is seen as judgmental, or expectations, or rules, or proper etiquette. When we think of church tradition, and just sitting in this room is a good example of church tradition, right? And I think of my family, like my mom and my brothers, all just think of Christians as judgmental. We have no other view, and even me as a new Christian, I became a judgmental person. And so then nothing like being slapped in the face by my family for being a judgmental Christian for years and years and years. And finally just learning that hospitality is just loving who they are and where they're at. It has nothing to do with proper theology or like, oh, you shouldn't have a drink today because that's bad for you. Well, they're going to see me as a judgmental Christian, whether I'm looking at their mental health or their physical health. And so it's like, okay, here we go, just love, right? I mean, ministry and reaching out has to do just purely with love and relationship. I think that's the true way to show his light and who he is, and then hopefully from their salvation.
Good word. It's so big, and it's so simple. It's so deep, but it's so tangible. Where do we all got so screwed up along the way? I'd like to go to the passage we looked at last time and just review a little bit. So some of you who were here last time, you can help us remember something that we noted from the way Jesus did this, did things, and something that were maybe poignant for us. Would somebody like to read that nice and clear and loud? We spent some time on this passage last time and had some observations about it. Does anybody remember from last time, or do you want to, just, what are your thoughts, or what do you notice about this today? Some things that strike you about it, about Jesus, and about the people.
Well, is this where you linked in that? It's just been the phrase that's continued to ring to me from last time. It's moving. He's moving someone from the outside to the center of attention.
I think one of the most profound statements is, because this is Jesus. He had just been teaching and he'd been healing, miraculous healings. He commanded the sea to be calm. He was gaining momentum. And he's doing physical healings and amazing teaching, and he's just absolutely just gaining momentum, and the crowd is following, and they're going along, and then there's kind of this weird little story where he's walking along, and as Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew, and saw him,
but he didn't just see him. He turned to him, and he actually saw him. And he invited him. And that's, we're talking about how Jesus invited him, or made him, Jesus made Matthew the center of his attention. And that is just, that is incredibly profound. As he's walking along, and the disciples and the people, and he was the most despised, the most marginalized, the most avoided, the most, like, just stay away from that guy. You know, a government-sponsored crook, basically. And as they're walking by, Jesus looks over, and he sees him, and you can just imagine all the disciples, you know, looking, hey, Jesus, what, you know, what, and he turns, and they're like, no, this isn't what you're supposed to do. And then he walks over and he talks to Matthew. And all of a sudden, this completely marginalized man, who's always on the margins of everybody's attention, is at the very center of Jesus' attention. And that's the first act of hospitality. That's the first act of invitation, is just making somebody the center of your attention. This is important at Mosaic, because a lot of people come and they're on the margins of people's attention all the time, because they're weird, or they're loud, or they're obnoxious, or they're hurting so much, or they're drunk, or whatever. There's one guy that comes in, and I've known him for, well, I knew him at 10, so I've known him for like 15 years. And he's kind of walks around, and he's pretty severely mentally ill. And he knows me quite well. And so whenever he sees me, he launches into some sort of conversation. I might have actually mentioned this before. He launches into some sort of conversation that we've had before, because I'm in, he's at my office, and we've talked about, you know, some person. So usually these days, he'll come barging in, and middle Mosaic, and before starting or something, and he'll say, hey, Tom, I was walking down the street the other day, and I seen somebody, and well, and then usually his first topic of conversation is the struggle with masturbation. And a couple months ago, I was walking down the street with Lisa and my wife, and we're and she knows him too, and we're walking along, and we were in a back alley where there's a new apartment, and there's some people sitting on their porch. And he came right up to me and started talking about masturbation. At least there are these people on their porch heard it. But he's in his own world, right? And he walks in. But if I catch him, I say, hey, Joe. That sounds brilliant. Hey, Joe, how's it going? And just, he clicks out of his, and he'll kind of, he'll meet my eyes. His eyes will meet my eyes. And I'll say, so, how was your apartment last week? Or, how's your apartment? You know, what's going on? And it just clicks him out of that space into the space. And we can actually connect. And he's so used to being ignored and just not listened to. Whatever he talks about doesn't matter anyways, right? So he'll talk about whatever, and then he'll go on. But if you stop and you make contact with him, then he'll have a conversation with him. It's another guy who comes quick to Mosaic. And if you've been to Mosaic in the last little while, he used to sit. He sits right in the front row, and he eats really loud. Like, we usually have food, sometimes just bread and stuff, sometimes you have soup, but he eats really loud. He kind of belches a bit. And he gets up, and he opens up the window, and he spits out the window right in the middle of the Mosaic. But again, he sits for it, and he's quite often talking to himself. And so when he comes in, and we've realized that when he comes in, and if nobody engages him, then the whole time he'll be talking to himself, and he'll be eating, and he'll be kind of, and he's got the Bible memorized. Like, he is a brilliant, brilliant guy. If I ever quote a text, he'll quote it in the King James, word for word, from anywhere, right? But if we don't engage him, then he'll be off his roof. But when he comes in, if a few of us will just say, hey man, how's it going? And give him our attention,
allow him to give us his attention, then the rest of the night he's usually tuned in a little bit. Not a lot, but it just makes a difference. People are used to being on the margins. That's the first act. Okay? So Jesus noticed him and brought him into the center of his attention. Okay? And then what else do we notice from this?
Just like that many tax collectors and sinners. So I don't know, in evangelism we have to talk about like that one person that comes and hopefully the others will follow. And then it's in Matthew's house. So it's like the tax collectors and sinners that are coming are probably also not comfortable with Matthew's house.
Well, that's interesting to hear, because it's like Jesus says to get up and follow me. Right? So he says to the guy, follow me, and then the next scene, they're at Matthew's house. So basically, it was just like, follow me.
We're going to your place.
It's like, hey, I'm going to go off our view of your name.
That is really, really profound. It's really profound. He brings them in, he asks them to follow him, and obviously they end up, and I think the other version says, Jesus actually tells them, we're going to your house for supper. Can't remember. But anyways, they end up at Matthew's house, and who's comfortable with them? Matthew's comfortable with Jesus. All of Matthew's buddies, all the other tax collectors and sinners and marginalized, they're totally comfortable with Jesus. And Jesus is totally comfortable with them, right? So, this is an amazing thing. They're all comfortable with him. The crowd is comfortable with him. Jesus is comfortable. What else do we see?
It's interesting you think about hospitality and people coming over to your house, which is one form of it, but I think it also says something where you're not just saying, come and join my life and how I do things, but you're saying, I want to be in your space too.
Absolutely.
And what goes on in your world.
I think that's very respectful of recognizing that coming to a church might have been more intimidating, coming into somewhere where he may have been more likely to encounter that. So it was extremely gracious, allowing him to be in his own home and coming to be with him there would have been feel any differently than he had been in his home before. So it was, there was a huge leap.
At Matthew's house, Matthew wasn't the tax collector. He was the host of a party. And all of his tax collector and sinner friends weren't tax collectors and sinners. They were guests. Right? They're hosts and guests with Jesus. Having supper with God. Didn't matter where, you know, who you were. You were just having supper with God. It's awesome. That's great. A couple more things. Who are the ones that are holding on to the labels?
I don't know whether the Pharisees were invited or whether they just came along or because suddenly they're there. Just saw this, so they're on the outside of the dinner. So then they didn't ask Jesus, they asked the disciples, hey, why is your boss doing this like that? Here's the lecture.
That's interesting, eh? I mean, one would definitely perceive that they would have been invited if they would have wanted. If they would have wanted. I think this is a great example in this, as many stories where, you know, nobody's excluded from grace. Nobody's excluded from grace. But people can choose to exclude themselves. So here they are, calling them, you know, their guests and hosts, and now, no, they're tax collectors and sinners. Let's keep this straight. They're still tax collectors and sinners. Right? And they sit outside. They stand outside. They have the opportunity of having supper with God. The table's there. But they're excluding themselves. They're excluding themselves from grace. And continuing to, you know, I think we see that there's no exclusion from Jesus, but they choose to exclude themselves. Yeah. So Jesus uses it to speak about who is in and who is out. I mean, the irony of it's not the healthy you need the doctor. So he's saying, you know, if you think you're healthy, then you think you don't need grace, then you don't get it. But as long as you know you need a doctor, the doctor's here. As long as you know you need grace, you got grace. But if you don't think you need it, then you don't get it.
There's a quality there, too. That they're not comparing one to another, one person to another. Like we do in the world. Like, I'm better than you because I've got this, or I want to do this, so I'm better than you. So there's not any comparison there. It's just all the quality.
Must have been a huge cultural gap. Like the Pharisees are obviously the righteous that the comparison down below, and then you have the tax collectors, and who are they culturally different than Jesus and the Pharisees? And so Jesus and some of his disciples would be in a very big cultural gap in the home that they're eating. And yes, Matthew's the host. But probably he's hosting in a very different way than some of these disciples would have been used to. And but the reference is that they're eating together, right, with him and his disciples. So they're obviously crossing some cultural gaps to be able to sit at a common table and be able to relate, as you said, in equality or maybe more equity. It's like if you do things different, and that's okay.
I mean, this must have been so freaky for the disciples. Like, this is, who is this guy? He's healing all these people. He's already including all these people. But now, here we are in Matthew's house. What are we doing here? What is he doing? And these Pharisees, who were people that they would have admired and looked up to and feared and felt bad that they weren't more like them their whole life, these religious leaders, are all of a sudden on the outs. And all these people that they have despised or kept away from are on the in. I mean, it's like a total warp, change, disorientation. Right? And you imagine all the tax collectors and sinners who are used to being, you know, they're the ones that are being excluded. And now they're being included. Jesus is yucking it up with them, you know, passing them the wine and the bread, and they're hanging out. Whereas the ones that are always at the center of everything are watching. That would have just, you know, spoken so much. That would have just done so much for them. So Jesus, the powerful teacher, healer, the commander of nature, is also the ultimate host. And I think, you know, as we go through the Gospel of Matthew, there's the teaching, and there's physical healing, and there's all these different things. Well, this is a social healing. This is a cultural healing. This is a spiritual healing. Matthew experiences healing in this context. So we went on to, just quickly at the end last time, we reflect on this passage. So somebody could read this. We see some of the same things, but some different ways too.
As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, "Stay with us, because it is almost evening, and the day is now nearly over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed it, and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight.
So this is the story after the resurrection, when two of the disciples are walking along the road to Emmaus, and they're talking about Jesus and the way that he's died, and rumor has it that he's raised from the dead. And Jesus comes up beside them, and they don't recognize him, they don't realize it's him. And they tell him the story of Jesus, and they're going to walk on. Jesus is going to walk on, and they invite him in for supper. And then he eats with them. So, what do you see from this story about Jesus and hospitality and the dynamics of inviting people in? Well, maybe I'll just highlight a couple things that came up with last time. One really important thing is that these two, they were grieving over Jesus' death and the confusion of the resurrection. And basically all of their hopes in life had been dashed. So here we see these two really vulnerable, really broken, really hopeless people invite a stranger in. And I think that in and of itself says something. Hospitality isn't when, okay, I've got it together. I've got my life together, I've got the table set right, you know, I've got lots of time to spend, I've got, you know, the situation is just tickety-boo for me to have people over. How long has it been since I've said or heard that? But in their own vulnerability and in their pain and in their disorientation, they still extend an invitation to a stranger. And I think that's something for us to... It's out of our lives that we invite people in. We're not putting something on. And then in the story we see that they're invited in to a meal, and then they sit down and they eat with Jesus, and then ultimately Jesus ends up being the host of the meal. So they invite in, but then they recognize Jesus, and Jesus is the one that breaks the bread, and Jesus ends up being the host. So we talked about that last time, about where we invite in, but really we're the ones invited in. And we're invited in first. We're the host. Are we the host or are we the guest when we have somebody over? Well, we're both, because the guest is Jesus. And that Jesus was recognized when he broke the bread, and in the power of food, of eating together, the intimacy of that. We can see God revealed in that. So we've seen through these what hospitality does, and what Jesus' hospitality did for the people around him, for the marginalized, for the tax collectors and the sinners, for the disciples. I mean, it was transformative. They entered into the life of God through that. But why is it so hard? Why don't we do it then? We do it some. But what's so hard about hospitality? What time do you want to take a break?
How about this question?
Yeah. So we've seen the importance of hospitality and the basis of hospitality and worship and salvation and example of hospitality and the fruits of hospitality. Why is it so hard? What's hard about it?
It can be vulnerable. Like when you, let's say you have somebody over, you know, you don't know them too well, and then they're coming into your place and just looking at your books. Or, you know, back in the day when we had CDs, you know, they're looking at your CD collection, and you're like, oh,
was leaving you.
And so it's just, I don't know. It was better. It was the first, yeah, anyway. You're inviting them in a way where, you know, not only are you making yourself vulnerable, but then, you know, like, it's awkward, but now I have to try and carry something along. And you're, like, pushing yourself. You're in your comfort zone, but you have to push yourself outside of your comfort zone at the same time. Yeah, it's just weird. It can be weird.
Somebody said you're here.
The pace of our lives, as hosts and guests, that's
something I think as a North American culture we need to value again and look at some of these. And they'll welcome anyone into their house and feed them. That's all they care about. If you go home with a full stomach and felt loved, not whether or not we provide you with the most set table and looking house. So,
a lot of cultural barriers you're talking about here, isolated, rationalistic, you know, Western consumeristic, militaristic culture.
Can I maybe quickly share about the dinners at our church? As you know, like, we started the church at Chesterfield House, right? And like, I've invited, like, Ruth made us like a dinner the first night we had it, and it inspired me to go knock on a bunch of doors and where I live, and and so many people were like, what, free dinner? Like, wow. And like, we had like, about, maybe the first time we had church, we had about four people over, like one guy from like the community, one free from the house, or from the apartment. And like, sometimes I describe it as holy chaos. Sometimes, like, but it's actually like, really, it can be chaotic, but like really good. So like, I guess I wanted to ask, like, What are other church dinners like? Or like maybe like an encouragement to the other churches, like maybe there's some neighbors on your heart that you could invite over to the dinner part of church, right? Because maybe they might feel weird at like the, I guess the Bible teaching part or whatever, but like, are there like some people in your neighborhood that you can, like, hey, we're having a potluck or whatever, right? Or with like friends or, because that's how I, we kind of bring it, like, I bring it across when we meet, like, potluck at Kara's. And, like, some of them know it's, like, some of them know it's, like, a church group. Some of them don't. But, like, I guess, like, yeah, like, it's been actually, I really enjoy it. Even though sometimes there can be too many cooks in the kitchen. Like, yeah, like, sometimes people are like, yeah, wow, dinner at Megan's, or wherever you guys meet.
It's awesome. Yeah, holy chaos, that's how we describe Jose. It takes some time. Before I break for an example of, and Mosaic is, it's not my home, so you know, when I talk about hospitality and Mosaic, there's different levels of Mosaic, of hospitality. We do have people in our home, of course, and then we meet people in public, but Mosaic, we consider a threshold space where it's safe for people to come, and there's different places that in your life that can be different ways depending on who you're with, whether they're safe or whatever. But one guy who's been coming, he kind of came into the center of my attention about 11, 12 years ago. His truck ran out of gas and he was trying to get to Edmonton and he needed money for gas, which I used to, my office stop would be off the back alley just off Broadway, and I got that story all the time. But I often actually went and got gas, cars, or anyways, that's how it started. And then he started getting involved at, when I was at 10, and then he's involved with Mosaic. And now he's makes Bannock almost every week when we're at Mosaic, and he's a part of every meal. And he's just involved, and he's been invited in so many times, and he just got baptized on Saturday after 11 years of just more and more invitation in, right? And it takes time, but it started with, you know, a gas card and a meal or whatever. So should we take a look?
Yeah, I was just going to sort of laugh. Sometimes I think that it's just that we don't have it. You know, so it's like a muscle, right? Somebody can be glad we've got these things. But it's like, we're just not exercising it. But maybe we started exercising and discovered, hey, well, this is kind of easy. And a lot of fears and concerns with that are, we realize they're not really fears anymore. I guess. We get in the habit of it. Yeah. I'd like to see us in the habit of the church. We're known as one of the habits we got for hospitality.
Awesome. We're talking a little bit about that in after too.
Yes, so